here. Okay, today is June 26, 2023, and we are here interviewing with Mr. Nolan Hong and
in Los Angeles Lodge.
In Los Angeles Lodge, and with the Sue Ellen Chang and the Munson Kwok. So thank you so much, Nolan, to come for this interview.
Well, it's a pleasure to do it.
So I'd like to start asking you, could you please introduce yourself? Where were you born? What's your name?
It's okay. I'm Nolan C. Hong. I was born here in Los Angeles, California. And my father was Y.C. Hong, a prominent immigration lawyer here in Los Angeles. And my mother was Mabel C. Hong, his wife and my mother. And I was born and raised in Los Angeles. I went to L.A. High School. And from there, I went to Pomona College and got my BA degree, and then my law degree at USC Law School. And after that, I started practicing law with the city attorney's office in the city of Los Angeles. And there I met a lot of friends and made friends. Roger Arnberg was a wonderful city attorney, and he appointed me to be the chief counsel for the Board of Harbor Commissioners, which was an extremely interesting position because it dealt with the maritime law and particularly dealing with the various foreign steamship companies. And so along with the head of the department, we negotiated many, many contracts with the foreign steamship companies. The most difficult group were the Japanese, because they had a methodology in negotiating things where they would have different groups who would negotiate different parts of the contract. And so those were always very, very long and at times very challenging. But in any event, it was a wonderful experience to have done that. And after the city attorney's office, I left and went into private practice. And there I concentrated on doing litigation law and was able to try any number of cases there as a private lawyer. One of the most interesting was the MGM casino fire. And my client at that time was the Delhi Web Corporation, which was one of the major contractors in the United States. And Del Webb was a very interesting client because he made his initial fortune by constructing military housing during the Second World War. And so I've continued practicing law up to the present at various law firms, and which it's been both challenging and very interesting work. And presently, I work a great deal with the Los Angeles County Bar Association, and I'm a past president of the senior section of the LA County Bar.
The difference between, say, working for a part of government and then private practice, what led you to stay in private practice? I'm sure maybe you were probably sought out to go back into government at one time or another.
Well, you know, private practice, once you get into it, you become very involved. And at one point, I was the managing partner of one of the firms.
Mm-hmm.
And once you do that, it's very difficult to go back into public service, although many people have done this over the years. But it's a complete, you know, change of lifestyle when you go from public to private and then private back to public.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, usually those that go back into public service do it by running for an office, such as a city attorney or attorney general or something of that nature, or becoming a judge.
What makes you decide to go to the legal field?
Well, I found out that while I was in college that the science subjects weren't all that interesting to me. And I did have some ability in writing. So I thought that maybe I should use what I could do best.
And you mentioned that your father is well known, you know, YC Hong. And how much influence do you think that he had on you in terms of your career development, and or, you know, what kind of a father he was to you?
Well, my dad never encouraged me to be a lawyer, and he thought I should do whatever I would enjoy doing the most. But in as much as he was very involved both with the CACA and in public affairs, I had an opportunity at a very young age to meet many of the founders of the CACA, as well as a great number of politicians locally and nationally, as he was involved in immigration legislation as well on the United States side, and then knew and dealt with people in Congress and in the Senate. So being my father's son, it gave me an opportunity to do things and meet people that I otherwise wouldn't have had the chance to do.
Do you remember maybe roughly what age you were when you met your first dignitary, if you wish?
Well, I was probably...
Were you even 10 years old?
Well, I was probably older than 10 when I first met any dignitary. And I do remember meeting Richard Nixon when he was running for Senate.
Up and coming.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that was an interesting experience, because he was trying to attract voters from the Chinese community at that point in time. So he sought my father out, and fortunately for me, my father brought me along, so I had the chance to meet him. My father also dealt with Senator Nolan, and I got to meet him as well in the CACA archives, there is a photo of Senator Nolan in my dad's office with a group of other Chinese, and they were discussing legislation.
I was wondering about your name. Was anything to do with Senator?
No, actually. My name is somewhat unique because our family doctor, who when he started practice back in the late 1800s, was actually the family doctor for my grandfather, grandmother, and my dad. Mm. And Dr. McFarlane rode from town to town on horseback to treat people in all these little desert communities.
Yeah, looking back, you folks were not in Los Angeles at that time, huh? Where were you?
No, at that time, my paternal grandfather was in a small town by the name of Daggett. And Daggett was a place where they mined, borax. If you remember 20 mule team borax, which was used mm-hmm. to clean your hands and all. Well, the borax came in great part from the Daggett area. And my father, my paternal grandfather, worked on the railroads. And when that was completed, he went into the Daggett area and became a cook. And so he ran a restaurant and eating place for the miners. And that's when my father first met Nolan McFarlane, the family doctor.
His first name.
His very first name. And so in later years, Dr. McFarlane practiced here in Los Angeles and hooked up again with my father and mother. And so he was the doctor who delivered me. Well, without asking my parents' permission, when he signed my birth certificate, he gave me his own first name, Nolan. And so my name's spelled N-O-W-L-A-N-D, which is a unique spelling, but it's a Scottish spelling as opposed to the Irish spelling, which begins with a K.
Yes.
But...
the senator.
Right. So my mother and father said, well, you know, that's not a bad name at all. And so they just kept it. And so that's how I got to be named Nolan as my first name.
It's now part of history.
Right.
Documented history. Right. Thank you.
Actually, speaking of that, how much do you know about your grandmother?
I know very little about my grandmother because she died when I was about two and a half years old. And I knew my maternal grandmother much better because she lived until I was probably about six or seven. And at times she stayed with us at our house.
So what did you remember your both grandmothers? Could you share a little bit?
Well, my maternal grandmother was very strict, course, was very Chinese in her ways. And I remember that one time she cut my hair like a bowl, and my mother and father nearly had a fit when she did that. That's one thing I remember about her. I do remember my maternal grandfather much more, because he lived longer than my grandmother and did stay with us for many, many years. And I really enjoyed his company, because I would take the streetcar with him downtown Los Angeles, and we would have lunch together. And so that was always a lot of fun.
Did your father talk a little bit about his parents? How did they meet and how did they get to?
No, he never spoke about my his parents very much. He never mentioned anything about how they met. It is interesting, though, that back in those days, in the late 1800s, my grandmother came over, and in our archives at the Huntington Museum, she had something like, I would call today, like a passport. I can't recall the specific term, but that was the documentation for her admission into the United States.
Your father was born in which city?
Well, we believe he was born in the Bay Area, but his birth certificate was lost and burned in the big fire in the late 1880s. But we believe he was born in the Bay Area at some place, because in those days, of course, the only doctors that would treat the Chinese were Chinese themselves. So it's very likely he was born in the Bay Area.
Did he mention anywhere else, like Stockton, or did, you know, other cities that the family actually reside?
Well, after my grandfather died, when my father was about 5 years old, they moved from Daggett to both Oakland and San Francisco. Because I remember my father saying that when he went to school part-time in the Bay Area, he had to take the ferry back and forth. Those were very, very hard times, because his mother, being uneducated, of course, worked both in a cigar factory, rolling cigars in the daytime, and a seamstress at night. And I remember my dad telling me how difficult it was for them to get enough to eat in those days. And he would go to the Chinese bakery, and the bakers would sell the crumbs that were left over from their pastries or whatever they made, and he would buy those, and that would be many times the only subsistence they had. So it was a very, very difficult life when he was growing up.
Your granddad was doing what in San Francisco or the Bay Area?
Well, he went up. The only reason he was there from Daggett was to have an operation. And I don't recall what type of operation it was.
I see.
But I do recall my father saying to him, when my grandfather was going to the hospital, that it was likely the last time he would see him.
Mm-hmm.
Because most all of the patients in those days died of pneumonia rather than from the surgery.
You went to the hospital.
Right.
Likely you're not coming back.
Right.
Oh,
and so he went to the Chinese hospital in San Francisco, and there he passed away.
So you know, your dad talked about his mother, your grandmother, and remind me of the gate in
right.
Chinatown. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes.
Yeah.
When my father was quite young, one of his uncles, which would have been my paternal grandfather's brothers, was playing with him. And typically, you know, they'll throw kids in up into the air and catch them and all. Well, my father's uncle, my dad's uncle, threw him up in the air. And when he came down, he didn't catch him not intentionally, but by a mistake. And as a result of that, it severely injured my father's back. Which affected his growth, and so that's the reason why he was very short in stature. And because of that, his mother always said that he wouldn't amount to much. And, you know, which was a terrible thing to hear from your parent. To say that, but he erected the gate in part as a way of showing that he had forgiven her for having said those things to him as a child. And the gate is very interesting because when it originally was constructed, the Chinese characters on it were not only in love for his mother, but actually had comments about the Japanese, because that was part of the Second World War. And there were, of course, very strong feelings against the Japanese.
Yeah, I recall the gate was first erected around 1942, something like
that. It would have been
39.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, I remember seeing the gate in part put up because it was made out of logs.
Mm-hmm.
Leftover logs from the railroad.
Oh.
And that's, you know, why they're the support for the gate was in round poles and painted. And I can recall as it was called, New Chinatown. When they started construction, because they had a lot of red, these huge red ants that if they got on you, they really bit you. And, of course, Peter Suho Sr. was very instrumental in obtaining the property for New Chinatown. In those days, They wouldn't sell property to individual Chinese people. So and I can't recall the name now of the railroad person that Peter Suhu Sr.
Herbert
Lapman.
Yeah, Herbert Lapman, that's all right. That's Herbert, the name. In any event, Uncle Peter, as I called him, was very good at negotiating and getting along with people. He was also a graduate of USC Engineering School and worked for the Department of Water and Power. In any event, they came up with the concept of creating the Chinatown Corporation. It wasn't a sale to a Chinese individual, it was a sale to a corporation. And that's how they acquired the property here.
Even though they were Chinese?
Even though they were Chinese, that's
right. Did your dad have any role in those doings as advisor or anything like
that? Oh, he was very much involved with Peter Suhu.
Okay.
In the creation of Chinatown here. And the Suhu family often came over to our house and we had dinners together. And I recall overhearing their discussion about Chinatown and its creation.
Your dad built some of the most beautiful buildings that are in the Central Plaza today. Did he ever express to you anything about the perspective of why he put so much effort into it? They're fantastic.
Well, that's true, but the most interesting thing about it is that my mother was very involved.
Ah.
And she was the one who found the architects for Chinatown. My mother was one of the very few women, Chinese women, who went to college in those days up at Oregon State. When she met my father, he had already become a lawyer and had passed the bar and opened his practice. But he met my mother at a student conference, and they started corresponding with each other. And at the archives at the Huntington, there are boxes and boxes of their correspondence.
Oh,
lovely.
And when you go back and read the correspondence, much of it contained my father talking about his practice and how it was developing and how busy he was. In part, I think it was to impress my mother that he was a worthwhile person.
At that time, that was when he was still in San Francisco?
No, yeah. he was down moved. Here. He had already right. been down here and okay. started
practicing here
okay. in Los Angeles.
You remember the building of New Chinatown? How old were you then?
I was about six.
Okay. If I may
six
ask,
to seven.
What year were you born?
I was born in 1934.
Okay, so that was the beginning. So how did your, because they sold the property to the corporation, but I understand that your father, your parents, owned the property where they built, right?
Yes, the corporation then in turn, sold individual pieces of property to the Chinese owners. how they got the sales recorded, I don't really know. But in some fashion, they were able to do that. And so Chinese selling to Chinese wasn't illegal, of course, in those days. So that's how the property owners acquired their sites here.
Well, many times it was selling to American citizens.
I don't believe as far as Chinatown is concerned.
Oh, okay.
I think it was the corporation selling shares, in effect, to the individual property owners. Now, as I think about it, you would own shares, and that would be the methodology in which you acquired your property.
Mm-hmm.
And then your family is still now part of the Chinatown Corporation?
Well, yes, we still have shares in the Chinatown Corporation. And interestingly enough, the shares are in my mother's trust, and I am the trustee of her trust, of course. And so we are the single largest shareholders in the Chinatown Corporation, because the families, as they grew, would pass on to all the children, mm-hmm. The various shares. So most all of the shareholders only own portions of shares. But those that are all in the same family, of course, tend to vote the shares together.
That's great. I'm going to probably, it's a good segue to go into the family and your involvement in the Chinese community. I'd love to hear more about, even more about the personal stories, but then I'm going to pause a little bit and then we'll move on to